Welcome to the Coffee Cast with Stephen Hayward of Project X. Hopefully over a good cup of coffee, we're going to have a great conversation. So please join us to welcome this week's guest on the Coffee Cast. Welcome to this week's episode of the Coffee Cast. I have Kim Blair, a former colleague with me and someone who's a program manager for a large financial services organization. Thank you for joining me, Kim.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Great. We were just joking about the fact that about a couple of weeks ago we were kind of doing a little bit of a discussion with another former colleague, Mip, who's also been interviewed before, and you were making fun of us for being techno-weenie, talking about our phones and our Blackberries and Trios and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So just get the job done, Steve. That's what it's about. Just get the job done.
So what I was hoping we could talk about today is you made the transition a little over a year ago now from being in IT into being in the business, and then took over a fairly significant portfolio for a program. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of the conversations that you and I've had, I've noticed a lot of insight, even about IT stuff, just now that you're on the other side of the fence and really looking at it, and I'm sure you're driving your IT people absolutely bonkers, mm-hmm. but I'd love to kind of hear about what that's about.
So now that I am on the other side of the fence, there's a few, I would say, significant differences in my perspective, number one. On the business side, of course, there's a strong focus with respect to strategy and business objectives and overall how you're going to steer the ship and which direction you're going in, etc., which from a technology perspective gets lost in the translation. So being able to provide that perspective both to the business side of the organization as well as to the technology side of the organization is something that I don't think there's a lot of attention paid to at mm-hmm. all. So technology in the past, I guess, has been more of an order taker as opposed to an overall strategic partner, which actually helps you point the ship in the right direction.
Like that classic Dilbert cartoon where the computer programmer goes, I got this great system, meeting with the business person, and the person's going, well, I don't know what I want. You have to tell me your requirements. Well, mm-hmm. I don't know what I want. Well, the next cartoon was, well, if your system's so smart, have it figure out what my requirements
are. Yeah, just tell me what I want.
Yeah.
And I mean, that, I guess, goes to another big gap that I've seen, is that depending on the business group that you're working with, there is a really foggy line between roles and responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So the business owner or the business lead would look to the technology group, like you said, to actually define what their business requirements are. They don't really understand what a business requirement is and then what technology is supposed to do with that from a systems perspective. Mm-hmm. So in the area that I'm working in now, it's very, very much a collective consortium, and the roles and responsibilities are very blurred. And that's okay if you're working with the same people day in and day out, but given the situation where you're going from project to project and everything else, you spend an awful lot of time worrying about culture and team dynamics and roles definition, where you shouldn't really have to do that at all.
So tell me, what's the different view of success on the business side versus the technology side?
I think our business is grappling with this right now. So there's an awful lot of information out there. There's a lot of stats and metrics and mm-hmm. numbers, quantitative things that you can point to. If we increase by X percent, if we reduce our operating costs by X dollars, you know, you can actually turn your definition of success into something quite tangible if you spend the time doing it. From the business that I'm working with right now doesn't look at success that way at all. It's very much a feel-good thing. Mm-hmm. I felt good about this project, and we kind of did what we thought we were hoping we'd be able to do. Therefore, it must be a success. So I have an issue with that, number one. But technology, so take that aside and all of the
fuzzy stuff,
things that are wrong with that approach. Technology, on the other side, is very focused on, I don't know, writing code, like writing specs.
Well, I think they're kind of forced by definition to work as fast as they can to go through that waterfall methodology of requirements. Sign off. Did I capture your requirements properly? Okay, now I'm going to design it. Okay, I'm going to ask a business person to check design. Like, they're going to know what that means. And then code, largely due to the pressures of time and cost. Yeah. But that's what they seem to manage to. I mean, I remember working on some offshore projects where, you know, the people that were working on it were amazing. There was no ever an issue with the stuff that the people were doing, but they just delivered the wrong thing. But you know what? On page 232, line 7, paragraph 2, whatever it is, they hit the spec.
Yeah. And you know, in the environment I'm in right now, technology's definition of success is, well, we're okay so long as we're not getting in trouble for anything. And again, like understanding the industry, we spend lots of money all the time on all the wrong things, and there's a culture that sort of lends to a certain cadence, pace with which they operate. And I think your environment is a little bit different, where it's, you know, we've got to be fast to market, da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. Working in host systems, host legacy systems, where it takes, you know, umpteen million lines of code to get anything done, it's okay if they're slow because, hey, that's just the way it is. So I think, and again, from my perspective, it's like, so long as we're not getting in trouble for anything, we should be doing all right.
But it's funny, you know, you and I in that discussions we've had over a little, you know, talking about how to change that big legacy beast. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean in this case truly legacy systems. Mm-hmm. It's really talking about the approach to systems and using the rapid results approach that Bob Schaefer and I talked about in Breakthrough 2 weeks ago now. And, you know, those sort of things really change it up. You're not changing the people, you're just changing the way that they're approaching
that it. That is a huge cultural impact, right? So take a person that's been doing the same job, or relatively the same job, for 20, 25, 35 years, and say, okay, so remember we used to do things for, it used to take us a year to deliver on this piece of whatever, now we're going to try and chunk that up so that you're delivering value, which is what I'm assuming you're referring to.
Yeah.
Every 3 months or every 2 months or whatever. That's like fundamentally against how they've been operating for so long. So it really, I mean, ideally, yeah, you could take the same person or the same group of people and try and do that, but you have to understand that there is a huge, and you know what, I laugh about this, but the impact that a culture has on how you go about achieving your business objectives is absolutely huge. It's integral to the whole thing. So, like, we could, in our old web days, like, spit things out as quickly as we could because we were just tuned to doing things that way. We're talking about pointing the Titanic now 180 degrees the other way, right? So, in a large organization, that's a big shift.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because, I mean, we've been having mixed results in terms of people really like talking about our rapid results or our accelerate data approach for the data warehousing world. And it's not obviously this big hairy beast, but generally people think in 6 month, a year long implementation cycles where we're talking, you know, first phase of change is 1 month.
Yeah.
But it's a, you know, 100-day approach.
I think the approach is fantastic, and I think it has a whole lot of business value. And from a business management perspective, it's like, yeah, sign me up for that. I guess what I'm trying to say is taking that theory and converting it and trying to change the way people think about their jobs is a very different thing.
It's really now change management as opposed to, it's not about the process, the technology, or the business, it's change management.
Yeah, absolutely. And in a large institution, time and time again, I mean, it's pretty easy to sit back and look at what the issues are. Mm-hmm. Time and time again, it comes back to culture. So how do you change the culture of an organization? Well, your guess is as good as mine.
Well, as Graham would say, when change and culture collide, culture wins every time.
And that's exactly where we're at. So, yeah, I mean, so bringing it back to project management, though, it adds an interesting twist to the whole mix, right? Because you need to look at the kinds of people you're dealing with, how they're used to doing their job. You need to look at the business objectives that you've been set out to achieve, try to make them tangible, number one, try to convey that back to this group of people that have a certain culture, and then try and create project culture that doesn't necessarily take away from the overall organization, but also lends itself to you achieving your goals, right? So it's...
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. You almost need a degree in psychology as opposed to... And it's true. You laugh.
No, I laughed just because Jim, who's one of our senior consultants, has his degree, master's in psychology, and he and I had a laugh or a discussion because... You know, there's two types of titles that people have that kind of scare people away. It's salespeople, right? Because, they just want something, right? What do they want from me today? What do they want from me today?
Yeah.
And then there's psychologists. Okay, you're going to manipulate me.
That's right.
You know, and there's a little bit of psychology. Good salespeople use psychology to help understand and do things. But it's all psychology.
I find probably 20 to 30% of my day, that's what I'm doing. And, you know, I think... People traditionally call that, people management. Mm-hmm. Well, I've got my people management stuff I need to do. But really what you're doing is analyzing the people that you're working with, figuring out how to get them to do what you need them to do. And you might be manipulating them. I just think it's smart.
Right? Well, it's funny. I mean, you've got young kids and I've got a young little boy. But I find some of the lessons learned as to both how you get managed by your child and how you manage the children really actually relate nicely to work. Mm-hmm. Because in a lot of cases, it's the same sort of situation. You really don't have the language to truly be able to communicate together, to have it truly understood. Technology can't go and say, well, no, I have to do it this way because of...
Yeah.
And then, so it's really the same sort of language kind of communication that you have.
Yeah. We talk about the wall or the barrier to communication between technology and business. And it is quite significant in a lot of instances. And everyone says, how do you solve that? I'm like, well, how do you solve it with your two-year-old? And you go back and you say, well, you know what? If you look at your two-year-old and you see that they're not understanding what you're trying to say, you explain it a different way. If you see it's still not happening, you continue to approach it in different directions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, applying that to the business world, how do you solve communications issues? Well, you continue to communicate. You actually over-communicate.
Mm-hmm.
You conquer communications issues with communication. Like, there's no other way to do it, and it's exhausting, and it's, a huge time.
Frustrating.
It's
frustrating. You feel like you're being demeaned the whole time because you're having to re-say stuff over and over again.
But you know what? You do it, because that's the only way you're going to solve it, right? So.
Now, the only problem with our little metaphor or analogy is that usually on the flip side, except for when they're having tantrums and they're in that I don't want to listen phase.
That happens too.
Yes. They quite often, they're sponges, so they really want to know. So I've noticed with Thomas and I always kind of, whenever I have a big enlightenment on it, I throw a little post on the blog and say, questions, right? Like, so Thomas last night was all about alligators. I don't know why, but yesterday he asked me the question, what do alligators eat? And I made it a rule that whenever I didn't necessarily know the answer, I wasn't really ready to answer it. Instead of just kind of blowing him off, I said, well, why don't we look it up on the internet? Something Mitt told me about
that. Yeah.
And so I went and said, let's look it up. So last night we looked it up. And of course he didn't have the patience to look it up. So he looked it up and then he went running off to do it. But when I came out, as soon as he said, what do alligators eat, Pat? And then we were talking about it. He said, bunnies? Bunnies do alligators. But it's just, he has this, he's a sponge and he naturally wants to know. Mm-hmm. And not all the times are we in that situation in business where people really want to know. They care, obviously. Yeah. But, as one of our customers who's not very far away from where we are today in Mississauga said to me the other day, he said, you know what, Steve? Great, love to sit down and get together with you, but you know what? The stuff you're working on, there's nothing wrong with it. Mm-hmm. I don't need to meet.
Yeah.
Right? If you've got a problem and there's something you want, call me.
Yeah.
But I've got many, many bigger fish to fry. And I've got to think in your business, it's even more extreme because you guys are running full out all the time. The project you're on is massive change. And there's no part of it stable yet.
Right. And won't be for some time.
But that, and I mean, there's the challenge. I mean, when you've got something that's going to, you're not really going to see the result for 2 years, it's really hard to articulate and talk about that communication.
Right. So, and you touched on something else. There are, what I think, very few people in any given organization that can actually, one, have a vision, create something. MIP is one of them. Comes up with these, huge ideas, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have those that like have the vision, and there are not many of those. There are those that can take that vision and actually do something tangible with it. And bridging that gap between the vision, yeah, we want to be the best in what we do, whatever that is,
mm-hmm.
and making it tangible. But I'm even talking before you get to execution.
Okay.
So we have this vision, how are we going to get there? So really what I'm talking about is converting high-level strategy to a tactical plan in something that everyone can relate to. So that, you know, a lot of companies are half decent at that. I think where the gap is keeping that overall strategy with you
mm-hmm.
all along while you're executing that tactical plan. Because one wrong move down here without keeping sight of this vision and you're toast.
Mm-hmm.
And I run into that day in and day out with project teams where it's like, you know what? Here's the vision. Here's where we need to be 5 years from now. Here are the steps we need to take to get there. Almost everybody I have working with me are really good at actually executing on a particular slice of that, but I'm telling you, the mistakes that get made when we're executing on those slices
mm-hmm.
by not keeping that vision in mind, and it's everybody that needs to hold that vision. So having the capacity to do that up and down your project team is huge. How do you train that? Right? Like, how do you... And this is more of a...
It's interesting. The story you're trying to tell me, and I'm going to actually... And I'll invite you to the discussion if you'd like to join us. But we talked with Bob Schaefer, and he's the mother, you know, the father of this breakthrough approach.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about Banorte, a bank in Mexico, mm-hmm. where they had that exact same issue. They had a big, massive, you know, it was a problem, which was a percentage of downtime of their ATMs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Very simple thing.
Yeah.
You know, as you say, is a strategy that's no longer acceptable. But they had all these people that were very, very good at execution,
yeah.
trying to solve the problem. They'd spent, you know, over a year and hadn't
yeah,
solved
right.
it, and he came up using this breakthrough approach to try and group those people together. And I haven't talked to him in detail about it, and I think it's really worthwhile, because this is about the third time in conversation
yeah.
that I've had it where I've gone, I should know more
yeah,
about
right.
this.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is an issue, and that cross-silo sort of thing, people don't necessarily always have the ability or the interest in being able to truly understand what's going on in that silo next to them and what that impact might be.
Yeah. And you know, my role as a project program manager type, I need to be facilitating that,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm finding that no matter how much information you give, and say, you know, you got to be thinking about this, you got to be thinking about that, you know, and every month you check in, and it's just like, okay, that's great. However,
mm-hmm.
you know, don't forget, blah, blah, blah. There's still that lack of... it's almost like the aha moment never happens, right? You get to the end of the project, it's like, oh, wow, isn't it great we did X, Y, Z? And like you said, you're kind of, sometimes you might even be delivering on the wrong thing. It's like, well, no, you guys. Here are the three reasons why you needed to be here. You know, off you go. And it's just trying to keep that perspective.
And the hardest part, if you're in a long project, after the first 9 months, people are already forgetting what the reason was, let alone
nine
3
months.
Years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, but I'm just saying, like, it doesn't take long for us to forget once you're knee-deep
into
a bunch of documents that you're
not
building
at all.
Against. So,
not at all.
And, you know, and I've had some great experience and exposure to some of these offshore, as well as great nearshore stuff, and it just kind of reminds you about how crucial, and I do mean crucial, mm-hmm. that everybody needs to be a part of truly understanding the business problem. So
yeah.
if you go back to your statement that you made about that strategy to tactics,
yeah.
and even I'll bastardize it a little bit and call it tactical strategy, because mm-hmm. it's still strategy
Absolutely.
Down at a lower level. But,
yeah.
you know, someone says, I want to increase productivity, but they don't tell you how much they want to increase productivity.
Yeah.
They don't tell you how they want to do it and what they're willing to deal with. And, you know, they could just be simple guiding principles.
Yeah.
Like, okay, no, we're not willing to lay people off. No, we're not willing to do this. No, we're not willing to go offshore. No, we're
yeah.
want to do this. Or, here's what we are willing to do.
Yeah.
But you don't know that. I mean, I sat in one of our clients that their annual general meeting the other day, and everybody was all excited afterwards because they talked about in it, we are going to do this. This is the year of working on their data warehouse, and they actually had the CIO have to stand up and say, yes, we're going to be done by the end of the year.
Yeah.
I was in a meeting with someone the other day, and they said, well, what did they actually say? And if you actually start, take away your filters of what you
mm-hmm.
think you heard and actually dissect
what
it,
you
well,
wanted to hear.
Yeah. All of a sudden you go, well, maybe that already exists, because, you know, there's a, to a certain extent, for sure it does exist, but you know, is it the, you know, the big thing? So
yeah.
There's always an ability for anybody
to interpret,
to deal with the situation. And obviously it's not fair in an annual general meeting. Obviously everything is very, very carefully surrounded by a little bit of...
I think sort of my idealistic view of how this should work kind of lends itself really nicely to the theory around a portfolio management approach, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you've got your high-level strategy, which is, you know, in 5 years we want to be this kind of company. And then, you know, your year one tactical strategy, let's say, here's what we need to accomplish in year one in order to get us to that fifth year end state. And under that, you've got, you know, project one, project two, project three, etc. down the line. And having a top-down approach view of this,
mm-hmm.
I think, is critical. So right down when you're dealing with project one, if something's going off the rails, if you keep it quantifiable, you know exactly how that's going to impact your year one
mm-hmm.
objective, right? I think typically what a lot of companies do is they have this strategy. So that's my idealistic view, but a lot of companies have this strategy way up here, and then they got a bunch of people with really great ideas that create projects, and they're trying to retrofit the projects and say, well, you know, I mean, I can dream up 101 reasons why what I want to do fits this strategy.
Oh, I saw.
It happens all the time, right? But, like, how fundamentally wrong is that? Like, how do you expect to get anywhere?
Well, also, you learn the internal customer, sorry, your internal corporate speak, and you know that if I mention this,
mm-hmm.
then most likely my project will get approved, even if I can't truly quantifiably say,
yeah.
I've got customer touchpoint improvement, or whatever the right terminology
was. But I think that's what gets people hung up on portfolio management, is that they feel that people will be able to circumvent the process by which projects get chosen or not chosen to represent
mm-hmm.
or to be a part of that particular portfolio or that part of that program. And in fact, they're doing it today anyway. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's sort of funny to me, right? It's like, well, you do that every day anyway because you don't have a structure in place to begin with. So what's the difference, really? Like, I don't know. I just think at the end of the day, somehow companies meet their strategic objectives or manipulate their strategic objectives so that it seems like they're meeting them. But I really don't understand how, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, based on how you see them operating, there's either a bunch of really smart people that can sort of tie it all together with a little bow at the end of the day so the shareholders are happy, and that's it. Because when you look at the actual operations, it's just not flying.
Yeah.
You know? So, and I don't know, have you seen a company that's doing that really well right now?
Executing against their strategy and at a tactical level? That's a good question.
Because I haven't.
You know, the funniest thing, and you've really kind of made me think about it a little differently, and if I go and compare, and I obviously, you know, I track, because of my past in the financial services industry, I track the top 5 banks in Canada, all the key performance indicators that they decide are theirs, and then I track how the other banks are doing it, or at least as close as I can to doing it. And, you know, there are certain ones in certain areas, and I think it just goes back to their strength from a business point of view. And it's clearly they'll have someone that's a great visionary, or they'll just be, that's their, mm-hmm. they're known to be in that business. And they seem to be able to tactically go out, you know, execute. But, you know, one of our clients yesterday was talking to someone, and I hadn't seen it, and one of our partners in our discussion about it really saw how clearly their marketing group was really without the technology that they were supposed to have,
mm-hmm.
and they, because they just were really smart and working their butts off, were actually hitting the strategy of the organization from a marketing point of view.
And you know what? I think kudos to marketing, because I really think, and I, you know, good point, marketing has come leaps and bounds, probably ahead of any other functional department in any company. From a strategic, how do you translate strategy into,
mm-hmm.
you know, measurable whatevers, and, you know, off you go down into the actual execution of it. I think marketing does a fantastic job. If the other businesses operated like marketing,
And then there's some good operational organizations. But the hard part is, you know, and I'm trying to remember what book that kind of says you're an operational company. Remember back
in
the...
Yeah, oh yeah. But you know what? Operations, you need to keep the wheels on the bus. That's what, I mean, and so...
So if you say
those
I
are the people that I'm working with, right? Mm-hmm. Keep the wheels on the bus day in and day out. Don't try and change the color of my bus. And don't try and soup up the wheels for me because I like them just the way they are.
But you know, I mean, in all fairness to, you know, we're always going to be talking about flaws and all that stuff, but they're working within some constraints of mm-hmm. how they can operate. They're regulated to death.
Yeah.
You know, they can't de-merger, so how are they going to grow? They don't have competition to drive them. So if you take William Lewis's Power of Productivity book, mm-hmm. and it's all about having open competition to drive the yeah. quality. So as yeah. an example, in Canada, when Home Depot came in and took over Aikenheads, did Home Hardware go out of business? No. Mm-hmm. They got stronger. Did mm-hmm. Canadian Tire go out of business? No. Guess what?
Yeah.
They're way better than they ever were.
Yeah.
You know, when Walmart came in, it's the same sort of thing, and they're trying to force, if you have that competition and see how it can be done, can you step up?
Like, but you're talking about a growth strategy, right?
Where no, it's a success. It's a survival strategy, right? If you don't, if you're in the banking industry, if you aren't finding ways to increase your productivity, leveraging your tools and your infrastructure that you're already there, then you aren't even finding ways to simplify your business model to drive forward.
And I guess that's what I'm getting at. So I think there's a difference between what I would consider a growth strategy from a, you know, we're branching out, we're getting new customers, we're like increasing our market share, that kind of thing. That's a very mm-hmm. different strategy than what you see in the financial services sector right now. Because, you know, handing one product to the other guy, I mean, it's just a swap. It's always a one for one, and you eventually get something back on the other side. The key is to the lean and mean part of it, right? So you take like an operational group, like their job is to work themselves out of a job,
mm-hmm.
basically, right? So how inspiring is that? But at the same time, that's the key to a successful bottom line in a financial services.
But, you know, and I'm not sure I necessarily truly understand, but if you follow mm-hmm. Bill Lewis's model, that if they work themselves out of a job, then they will be able to find themselves a new job mm-hmm. that will even be better. And because they understand the business, so it's the same reason I think that the connection between business and IT needs to be stronger, is that there's no way in hell, it doesn't matter how smart anybody is in IT, they will ever understand the nuances of running the business side of things. So even as a vendor, right. I can't go in and, you know, I get very frustrated. And I had a rant a bunch of months ago about the fact that people go in and say they know your business better than they do.
Yeah.
And it's just wrong. Yeah. I don't care who you are, if you're McKinsey or Bain or mm-hmm. all these other guys.
True.
There's no way, because they don't know, as you talked about, the cultural impact. I mean, the communications, what they're living, what the history is, all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. It just changes how you behave.
Yeah. And you know, I think there's a lot to be, I mean, again, I'd love to be a part of an organization where there's that really fluid movement between technology and business. But what I'm finding is the smaller the organization, the easier it is. It's just really, and you know, maybe I'm off.
Well, you know, I think, I mean, the hard part is, right, so you're in a project that's going to take about 3 to 5 years to deliver a program, and so how do you take someone out of the business if they're a key person for that period of time? So you need to be able to find ways to have shorter periods of time where you take someone mm-hmm. that's really good out of the business without it having a huge impact on the business, or how do you take them out fractionally, or things like that. And you know what, there was a guy at Bank of Montreal who was one of my clients on the business side, and he was absolutely spectacular. He was one of the best guys I've ever seen, and he was a senior guy, like just under vice chair at BMO, and he was really good at being involved in IT projects. And it, you know, he had Basel responsibility, compliance responsibility, and then he had a whole other little group of business that he had to do that was just his, and he was brilliant at it.
Yeah.
But it was just clearly somewhere along the line he decided he took interest in it, and did it. But he was always there. You could always count on him. And
I think having a strong, what you're talking about is having a very strong business sponsor that can appreciate the technical ins and outs and know when to draw on technology for insight as opposed to, hey, just go and do this for us.
Yeah. Right. Now, the flip side is they had a very good governance and steering committee mm-hmm. that we'd help them build. And, you know, kudos to them. They had a very, very strong program manager. She was awesome. And the VP that ran it was also didn't really care too much about the technology side.
Yeah.
He cared about running projects and
yeah.
being, like, to the yeah. point that he went and got himself PMP certified. And
yeah.
all that stuff because he wanted to understand all that stuff better.
Have you dabbled at all with Six Sigma?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen instances where Six Sigma sort of plays into the overall project approach?
I mean, you can do a lot of reading on it. I mean, there's
yeah.
just a ton of different people that have some approaches, but it's one of those things, it's cultural again, right? So if you talk, and everybody will always talk GE when they talk Six Sigma, there's one of the banks in Toronto that they're big, big believers in Six Sigma, and it, you know, sadly, it's one of those buzzwords that if you walk in and say we're Six Sigma approach to projects and process improvement and things like that, then you're, you know, golden. And it doesn't mean that you ever do it, just like talking about CMM level 5. It's really about your ability to take it in. Like, as an example, at the offshore company I was at, they were Six Sigma. They believed in it. It was part of it. And I worked hard. I thought it would be really interesting to understand it, to go and be a part of a project internally that I could do it, and I tried to do that, and it's just hard. It's really
yeah.
very difficult from a DNA point of view to change that, because it's a very straightforward approach in a way of thinking.
That's the word I hear an awful lot. So financial services sector and the company in the U.S., same thing, have I don't know how many hundreds of employees with their black belt.
Mm-hmm.
And are having a really hard time, you know, integrating the DNA of Six Sigma into the culture of their organization. They say it time and time again when we talk with them. So,
perfect.
Interestingly enough, it gets back to culture again, right? Like, it just gets back to culture.
Well, it's a little bit of leadership, right? I mean, if you look at what we lived through a little microcosm of time at the web company, and it had a very specific culture. But that culture came from the two leaders
yeah.
who had a very specific approach to the universe, and then when we grew to a little bit bigger, you know, it was never big,
yeah.
but that the key people that had their
yeah.
own, they could affect it huge.
What
right?
are you doing?
As an example, you know, Carl and his effect on
the Carl effect.
The Carl effect. I mean, it was just brilliant about how he was self-empowering, right?
Yeah.
Versus the other manager
yeah.
was all about micromanagement.
Yeah.
And no, it was still the same company, still the same overall culture, but of course, some people work better with the different kinds of approaches. I think it comes back to, you talked about it before, a little bit of that leadership, and it can happen at any point, right? It can happen. Leadership doesn't mean a title.
Mm-hmm.
It's around living and breathing whatever the strategy, and let's call it a tactical strategy in this case, but you really still need to be connecting the dots between top level strategy, tactical
right.
strategy, and then the actual tactics.
Providing perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think if that's the case, you can always form project teams that live outside. I don't want to say live outside of the culture, because that's not really the wrong approach. But let's say live outside their comfort zone. So let's call culture your comfort zone.
Yeah.
You can always get people to somewhat live outside of that comfort zone. And if it means approaching and viewing a problem in a different way, and as long as they're being coached and helped supported, then you can do it. So as in, you know, in any project management methodology, it truly is there as a framework to give you the support of knowing what's next and knowing what you're doing
right.
in context of being able to actually look at the overall problem and what you're trying to solve, as opposed to worrying about, okay, next step, next step, next step.
Yeah, so let's talk about the art versus the science of project
management,
right?
Oh.
So I live and breathe this every day. We project managers in every day. Big hiring thing, off we go. There is a distinct difference between PMP certified project management professionals
mm-hmm.
that have run projects before, that actually can think about what they need to do next,
mm-hmm.
and get the people to do what needs to get done next, as opposed to just give me my task list and I'll create a schedule for you and we'll just follow that schedule because that's what it is. And
mm-hmm.
so there's, and trying to, I mean, I can pick them out like this now, like it's very quick, just like you, like textbook, you, like savvy, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? And there's a distinct difference there. I think from an overall project management perspective, the fact that we've introduced this certification into the industry has, I think, helped a little bit, but also muddied the waters quite a bit in terms of, well, if they're PMP certified, well, they should be able to do this.
Yeah.
Finding dollars to donuts, it's not.
The
like
sad
that at
part
all.
Is it's one of those things that it's, I'm gonna, and it's not fair to lump it in there, but it's like ISO and CMM and even Six Sigma.
Yeah.
If you lump someone in and say they're certified, it kind of gives you this comfort zone of something. And it, in all the things we do...
It's false comfort, though.
That's right. You can't, and that's where it's going to go. So there's two things when I'm dealing with stuff. And so we're on a big hiring binge ourselves, and one of the main things we're hiring is project managers and business analysts. And I, obviously, because I'm the other way, I think PMP is a very interesting thing, and it's certainly important from a marketing point of view, because you can't go and sell yourself as a project manager in any of the banks in Toronto without being PMP certified. Yeah. The problem is the type of people we're looking to get are 15 to 20 years experience being project managers, and guess what? If they worked at a big five consulting firm, the chances are they didn't go and get it, because they didn't need it, because they in a Bearing Point, Capgemini, Accenture, they may have it, but it's the company's methodology that's important, not whether they're PMP certified. As long as they're trained to work in that. So at any bank, they have their own processes. So it's not as much about PMP certification as much as they know how to work their own processes and work it through. So that's the what I call, that should be like knowing to breathe when you wake up. Right. If you know how to breathe, and obviously I'm oversimplifying, but a work breakdown schedule is not what you live by. It's just something that you, when you wake up in the morning, you go, okay, just let me make sure it's updated, or at the end of the day, or as the day goes. But a good project manager is embracing into the problems, and we always used to joke.
Capturing the essence of the issue and making sure it gets solved, right?
Exactly, and if possible, moving it away from the people who don't have the ability to resolve it so that they're not having to stumble against it and butt their heads against it all the
time. Yeah, so find that somewhere in the PMP.
It's not.
It's not, right? And
but how do you? How would you ever certify that?
It's business acumen. Well, you wouldn't, right? But I guess what I'm getting at is now that there's the certification out there, it seems to me like it's being viewed as the silver bullet. It's like, oh, we'll just bring another PMP certified person in here, and off we go. Everything's great, and it's like we're lacking. Now I'm talking more about the project management community, but you're actually lacking in the business acumen side.
Yeah, so I'm an engineer. I have the iron ring to prove it, and I never went the PN route. Had all the paperwork.
No.
I had all the paperwork done. I had the work experience. I just had to submit it. I could have written a test, not a problem, because in my last year of university, I took the courses that prepped you to write the test.
Right.
So I just made the decision that it just wasn't crucial to what my job was in terms of whether that was going to hold merit. But the thing is a PMP gives you certification to be a project coordinator, not to be a project manager. The experience gives you all those other things. And I know that PMPs, you're supposed to have a certain amount of experience, but what do you call project manager experience? You know, did I organize and manage an event? You know, is that a project? Well, yes, it is. It has all the little various components, but is it complex? Is it... So you just need to be really careful, and I don't think it is a silver bullet, just like I don't think Six Sigma is, I don't think Breakthrough is, I don't think, you know, all of these things all have context to a situation, and even, you know, Jim would step in and say readiness, that you can't go and have someone bring in Six Sigma when no one's ready to deal with it. So it's an interesting challenge, and the thing that's great about it is that it doesn't matter how simplified you make it, it's more complex than that. So you need smart people to step up and really jump in.
Yeah, and I preach that every day, where it's like, you know what, if it wasn't a complex problem, we wouldn't be here to solve it, right? And there's not one answer to this thing, so you need to look at, you know, changing two or three different things. And I call it pulling the lever.
Yep.
Let's pull the lever on this for a little bit, see what it does, right? And monitor it, know you're monitoring it, and adjust based on that. But it's about calibrating until you get yourself, I'm using my hands, but calibrating until you get yourself going in the direction you need to go, and then the challenge is keeping yourself there. So instead of pulling the lever, you're actually using bumpers at the end of it to keep everybody in the box, right? So it's just different approaches as you
I used to think it was Sun Tzu, and I think I looked it up, and it was Patton that said that, you know, once you go into battle, all battle plans go away.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the same sort of thing when you talk about your levers, right? If you want to keep the car on the road, you don't just keep it pointed in one direction. You got to do it, because guess what? There's going to be construction that you didn't know about. There was a TTC strike, so what did everybody have to do yesterday, right? Like, all these things, they're all real life. And you can't, you know, it just takes experience and having the time and the bandwidth to be able to approach it. And those last two things just don't exist anymore in the marketplace. Right? There's not enough time and not enough bandwidth. So,
which I don't agree with you at all on that, to be honest with you. It's all about your priority, right? So long as you're given the right priorities in your life and in your business, you always have, and if those priorities stick with you, if they're important to you, then you make the time and you have the bandwidth. And it's all the stuff that isn't a priority to you personally that fall off. And you'd be kidding yourself if you don't think that's true, right?
Yeah.
And I think it happens in your personal life, and it happens in business as well. Until somebody makes it important to you in your business life, you're not going to pay attention to it. And they make it important to you a number of different ways. Either you get in trouble, or it's on your review, or you get incentive for it, like positive and negative reinforcement. But at the end of the day, those are the things you're working on.
Yeah.
It's whatever drives you, right? So, anyhow.
Cool. Well, thanks, Kim. I appreciate you taking the time. We're at Al Forno in Mississauga drinking. I'm drinking coffee. Kim's, it was great. I really appreciated it and love your context.
Fun.
I would have loved to have dug into your meeting from last week, but not available. But once again, thanks very much. For more information about Project X, please join us on our website at www.pxltd.ca. Or hop on our blog and join in the conversation at pxltd.typepad.com. This is a copyright of Project X Limited. Thank you for joining us today.